Giant reptilian kaiju battling giant robotic Jaegers, and humanity's fate hangs in the balance. NSTA reviewer Jacob Lickenstaff thinks science teachers may find this Hollywood depiction of the fantastic sequence in Pacific Rim useful in the classroom.
We always thought alien life would come from the stars. But it came from deep beneath the Pacific.
What the hell is going on?
As the season of blockbusters winds down, I'm looking back a couple of years into the archives at Pacific Rim, an alien invasion story directed by Guillermo del Toro, the director of Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy, and Mimic. We come into this story several years into the Kaiju War, humankind's fight against giant monsters who emerge from a rift in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and attack population centers all around the Ring of Fire. It should come as no surprise to regular listeners to this podcast that the first city attacked was San Francisco, and the Golden Gate Bridge was the first landmark destroyed by the Kaiju. Human engineers have developed Jaegers to fight the Kaiju, since traditional weapons were not very effective. Jaegers are giant robots that have a humanoid form, that is, a head, two arms, and two legs, and they're controlled by a pair of pilots who are mentally connected to each other and the robot. The idea is that the psychic energy it takes to control the robot is too much for one person to handle. The two pilots are temporarily fully aware of each other's brains during their pairing, or drift. Many of the pilot teams are relatives, sibling pairs or parent and child pairs. Battles between Kaiju and Jaegers typically happen in the ocean, just offshore from major cities or among the high-rises just onshore. In the initial scene in the film, we see brothers Raleigh and Yancey Beckett piloting the Gypsy Danger in a fight against a Kaiju. In the battle, Yancey is killed, but Raleigh survives to defeat the Kaiju and bring Gypsy Danger back to shore, though it's heavily damaged. Raleigh then leaves the Jaeger program and looks for work elsewhere. In spite of this near defeat, the Jaegers are generally effective against Kaiju, and the pilots are global heroes. The story then jumps 5 years ahead to a time when the Kaiju are arriving more frequently and getting bigger with each appearance. Jaegers are less and less effective against these giant kaiju, so world leaders are collaborating to build a wall around the Ring of Fire, which is designed to keep the kaiju out. Since the political leaders believe the wall will work, the Jaeger program is being shut down, in spite of dire warnings from the military commander, Stacker Pentecost, who's played by Idris Elba. All the remaining Jaegers are headed toward Hong Kong to be mothballed when a kaiju easily breaches the wall near Sydney and Jaeger striker Eureka saves the city. Pentecost then goes looking for Raleigh Beckett and finds him working on the construction of the global wall in Alaska. With some difficulty, Pentecost is able to convince Beckett to rejoin the Jaeger program for a last attempt to close the rift where the kaiju arrive on Earth. Beckett needs a co-pilot who is drift-compatible, and the best match for him is a young woman, Mako Mori. Pentecost does not want to allow them to pilot the rebuild Gypsy Danger, but in the end agrees. Further summary will give away too much of the plot, but you can guess that there are major battles between Jaegers and Kaiju, and in the end, humanity will be saved, which opens the door for a planned 2017 sequel. This film has received attention for the cool visuals of giant robots fighting huge reptilian creatures, and for recalling monster films of the 1960s and 70s, as well as its depiction of a competent female. Mako Mori is an unusual character in the science fiction blockbuster world. She is a woman who is very competent at her job, she succeeds in spite of major opposition, and she's never objectified or put into a sexy costume. Her main relationship with Beckett is one of respectful colleagues, not a romance. It's hard to find movies that present female characters like this, and particularly difficult in the action or sci-fi genres. What can science teachers take away from Pacific Rim to use in their classes? Well, last month I wrote about Ant-Man and making things very, very small. Kaiju go the other direction and are absolutely gigantic, which presents a different set of biological problems. I've written before about the strength and mass scaling problems, but this time I'd like to consider nerve signals. Nerve impulses carry information from extremities to our brains so that we can make decisions about where our limbs are, how they should move, and what kind of environment we're in. Temperature, pressure, wind, etc. Nerve impulses in humans move pretty fast, up to about 100 meters per second. This gets signals from our feet to our brains in just a couple hundredths of a second. Kaiju are huge, some over 100 meters long. That would mean that if a kaiju stepped on a spike, it would take a second for his brain to find out, and another second for his brain to pick his foot up off the spike. This could be a real problem, as a lot can happen in a second or two. The solution is not a second brain, as is presented in the movie, though. and is a long-standing misconception that dinosaurs had two brains. What happens in most creatures with spinal cord is that some signal processing and reactions are completed in the spinal cord, and our brains get involved only when a decision needs to be made. This dramatically reduces the distance and therefore the time it takes to respond to a stimulus. A scene involving a pregnant kaiju sent me looking up the distinction between oviparous and viviparous reptiles because I was surprised to see an umbilical cord on the fetal kaiju. It turns out that the filmmakers got that right if kaiju are basically viviparous reptiles. Students might recognize the prefix ovi, meaning egg, and the term oviparous. Most reptiles lay eggs and leave their young to hatch and make their way in the world. These are the oviparous reptiles. A few snakes and quite a few lizards give birth to live young, like the vast majority of mammals, and so are called viviparous. All viviparous fetuses need to get nutrients from their mother, and so an umbilical cord makes that connection. My mammalian prejudice initially led me to think that a reptile wouldn't have an umbilical cord, but I was wrong about that. Science teachers can use Pacific Rim to bring up some interesting neurobiology and show students an example of a giant viviparous reptile, as well as recognize an unusually powerful female character in Mako Mori.
For more of Dr. Blickenstaff's reviews, go to the NSTA website and search for Blick on Flicks.
It is pretty cool.